listening to CLNS Media, powered by betonline.ag. Go to clnsmedia.com/roll. Use our promo code CLNS50 for 50% off your first deposit.
Everybody, we're back at the Red Sox Beat podcast presented by CLNS Media, your leading online audio and video provider for Major League Baseball. I am the host of this show, Chris Cotillo, cover the Red Sox for Mass Live and host this podcast on a weekly basis. And we have now episode 227 of Red Sox Beat. Our guest today is Matt Vautour, my colleague and our columnist at MassLive.com. We have a ton to get into. Obviously, it's August 1st, which is, you know, kind of a big date on the baseball calendar as everybody gets to sleep in, relax, kind of assess what went on in the last 48 hours in baseball. And obviously around the league a lot with the trade deadline. Here in Boston, not so much. So Matt and I were at Fenway yesterday, you know, taking in all of the, you know, what are the Red Sox going to do once 4 p.m. hit. It turned out to be nothing. Dave Dombrowski then spent 25 minutes explaining to us why. And so, Matt, thanks for coming on and trying to sift through this madness with me.
No problem at all. Yeah, yesterday was kind of like you got all geared up for to see the solar eclipse, and it turned out to be a cloudy day, and there was nothing.
Yeah, and also a terrible weather day and a terrible game played by the Red Sox last night, which, in our other issues, they've now lost 2 of 3 as of the recording of this, or the first two, which means that they've at least lost 2 of 3 to the Rays at the time of this recording. So I might be swept tonight at Fenway Park before heading on to the Yankees, to the Bronx for a 4-game series, including a doubleheader against the Yankees. So plenty to get to here. I think, you know, at the beginning of the week, it looked like the Red Sox were going to get a big fish in the relief market. Edwin Diaz maybe kind of talked about, you know, Shane Green, familiarity with Dave Dombrowski in Detroit, Raisel Iglesias in Cincinnati. And then all of a sudden it kind of flipped to, all right, those prices are too high, but we're going to try to get some depth guys, maybe some guys that can help us in the sixth or help us in the seventh, looking at Daniel Hudson or a guy like Sam Dyson in San Francisco, maybe Will Smith in San Francisco, a rental. And when the clock struck 4, the prices were too high, leaving the Red Sox standing pat their whole deadline at this point and forever, because there's no August waiver deadline. They acquired Andrew Kashner from the Baltimore Orioles for Ilio Prado and Nolberth Romero, who nobody's ever heard of, either of those guys. That ends up being the only move. And Matt, I'm sure your reaction was one like the rest of us, one of surprise when Alex Cora and then Dave Dombrowski came out and said that we made no deals.
You think when, especially when you're talking about kind of like a lesser bullpen arm, you'd think they'd get something. That if nothing else, that at least presents the perception that you're trying to do something, and that you think you can make a move, because otherwise a bullpen that's been a sore spot for them all season, there's nothing that makes you feel like that things are going to get better down the stretch. And I wonder a little bit if last week's 5-2, you know, the playing well and taking series from the Yankees and the Rays, I wonder a little bit if that was almost the worst thing that could have happened for them, because it put them back into that middle gray area where they looked kind of good. And so maybe you feel like, all right, that there's a chance to go for it here and to maybe make a run. But at the same time, they hadn't done enough yet to feel like, well, for sure, go for a run. So they moved themselves back to the middle and ended up doing nothing.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of us thought that they were potentially going to be sellers, that we talked about that on this show, and especially when they lost 2 of 3 to the Orioles a couple weeks ago, you know, it seemed like, you know, selling was definitely an option. They then came out 1-2-3 in Tampa, 1-3-4 against the Yankees this weekend. And I thought at that point, you know, they'd be buyers and maybe make an aggressive move. A couple moves that were made yesterday stood out. The Braves didn't pay a ton for Shane Green. They actually paid up for Chris Martin from the Rangers. But two moves that I thought were deals the Red Sox could have done. The Twins got Sam Dyson from the Giants with an extra year of control for 3 prospects ranked outside their top 30. And then, in the case of Daniel Hudson going to the Nationals sent a 23-year-old right-hander who's in high A. That's not good for those who don't know. And he's 27th in Washington's system heading into the deadline. He's all the Blue Jays got for Daniel Hudson. The Blue Jays had a terrible deadline. I wrote about that this morning, my trade deadline winners and losers. You can see that on Mass Live. The Blue Jays are one of them because they didn't get, you know, a lot of value from any of their assets, really. But that was an especially bad deal that it's almost shocking the Red Sox couldn't have beat that price out. So
you wonder, would they have had to slightly beat that price, or they have had to considerably beat that price because it's a team in their own division? And did the Blue Jays look a little bit at the Red Sox like they didn't want to see them improve that much more because of the divisional thing? Whereas if you send someone to the Nationals, you send some it's not the same.
I think that whole perception is outdated. I mean, the Red Sox, their three of the four deadline trades they've made in the last 2 years have come with divisional teams. They got Steve Pierce from Toronto. They got Nathan Eovaldi from Tampa Bay and Cashner from Baltimore. The only outlier being Ian Kinsler coming from the Angels. Especially if you're that, you know, far out of it, if you're not going to be a contender for the next couple of years and it's a rental guy, I think there's no issue. But
that's totally logical. I'm just trying to think of something.
Yeah, I know.
Red Sox would not have been able to beat just that.
And I think it also speaks to the way the Red Sox farm system is perceived throughout the league. You know, if the Red Sox might have valued their guys more than the rest of the league valued them, obviously the farm system has gotten better in the eyes of experts this year. We've had a few guys from the Red Sox farm system get into the top 100, Jaron Duran, Bobby Dalbec, Brian Mata's kind of right on the edge there, and some others, obviously. Headlined by Tristan Casas, who I think was completely off the table. So the Red Sox, basically, I think what it came down to, the acquisition cost was high. I found it interesting, and you wrote about what the Yankees did yesterday, which was also nothing, especially, you know, in the starting rotation where they had the need. Brian Cashman said that they found in their estimation that the acquisition costs were too high across the league. So it's something where the Yankees and the Red Sox both thought, you know, we could use an addition, but the acquisition cost is too high. The difference, obviously, the Yankees are probably going to win the American League East. It would be shocking if they don't. And their problems won't catch up to them until October, when they have to face Houston or Minnesota or Cleveland or whoever. In the case of the Red Sox, their problems are going to start, or they did start last night, or maybe even in March. And they're going to continue with them for 2 months. And it's going to affect the regular season. And they're trying to get a wild card spot.
Yeah, the Yankees not making a move seem to make a lot less sense. If you're the Red Sox not making a move, there's a school of thought that you can come to that says Dave Dombrowski looked at his team and didn't think it was worth investing in. And given the way they played this year, given the problems that starting pitchers that you relied on have had. But the Yankees have to look at it with the record they have and the situation going into the day. This is, you know, before the Astros really loaded up, and think they could have been the favorites in the American League if they'd gone out and added a frontline guy. And so the Yankees do have a pretty good farm system at the moment. They have prospects they could have made that could have used to entice a team into giving them a better frontline guy. I think they probably could have gotten Stroman if they had pursued that.
And we know that he would have loved that
aggressively. There was all the talk about Robbie Ray and the Mets. The two Mets starters were in play. So it would certainly have seemed like if the Yankees had decided they're going to go get a guy, that it was there to be had. And Cashman was a lot more honest, I think, than a lot of GMs are in that situation. And, yep, and said that he was disappointed that he wanted to get better, and that they just didn't think that the prices were right. But I mean, if you're the Yankees, who have certainly established that culture of World Series champion is success and everything else is a failure. You have a team that could have competed for that this year with a little bit of help.
And I think, you know, they still will. I think there's a lot of guys who are still on the injured list that are set to come back. Luis Severino, obviously, you know, whether he comes back as a starter or kind of does the Eovaldi path and comes back as a reliever. They have Giancarlo Stanton, who's still out, and Gary Sanchez, Brett Gardner, Greg Bird, Dellin Betances. You know, the list goes on and on. The Yankees have been really banged up since the beginning of the year, so they're trusting that their internal guys will come back healthy and make a difference. I think that is a fair gamble because of those names and that talent. It's a more fair gamble than what we've seen from the Red Sox, who are banking on, I don't know, Nathan Eovaldi stepping into a role that he never has, which we've talked about on here. It seemed like a panic move at the time. Now it makes, you know, even a little bit more sense, a little bit less sense, sorry. And then, you know, obviously Darwin's and Hernandez and Josh Taylor have looked good. They're banking on those guys to step up. And we'll see what Brian Johnson's role is when he comes back over the weekend. So the Red Sox bullpen, for the third time in three chances, is going to be after a big chance for Dave Dombrowski to add to the group. It is going to be made up of in-house wild cards and pieces that, you know, are no sure thing. I think the best case in point for that is that they enter the season saying, okay, we have two sure things in our bullpen, and then the rest will fill in as we go. Matt Barnes and Ryan Brazier, or in the case of how Dave Dombrowski pronounces it, Ryan Brazier. It's been a year. He still doesn't get it right. Pretty remarkable. And I like Dave, and I actually am not among the people who think he should be fired for not adding to a mediocre team 9 months after winning a World Series. We'll get to that later, I'm sure. But that one, he is always pronounced as Brazier, and it drives everybody nuts. I think that was their two sure things, and they had a bunch of guys in spring training. People have forgotten already that they were these guys. Brandon Workman was not a lock to make the team at the beginning of spring training. He was a guy that, let's say, Tyler Thornburg showed up, and he looked like the Milwaukee version of himself, and he was going to be installed as a late inning guy. Then he was going to get a spot on the team. Or, you know, if someone had a ridiculous spring at some minor league free agent signing. So Brandon Workman, Heath Hembree, Tyler Thornburg, those kind of guys. If Steven Wright was not suspended and he was healthy and he was on the opening day roster, maybe a guy like Workman or Hembree gets cut. Those guys were Workman the whole year, and Hembree for a stretch had been crucial. The point being, you know, the Red Sox thought their only two sure things were Barnes and Brazier. Brazier is now in AAA, and it's been, you know, kind of an exact opposite of what they expected with him. The Red Sox at the trade deadline decided last year not to acquire a reliever. They acquired Eovaldi to lengthen their starting rotation, help that out. That obviously worked out great. Everything worked out fine. They won a World Series because Joe Kelly pitched his ass off in the postseason, and they moved Rick Porcello and Eovaldi and David Price and Chris Sale to relief roles at different points, and they kind of managed it and figured it out, and it worked out. And that, I think, to a point, gave them the false confidence to do that again heading into the season, where they didn't acquire Adam Ottavino. They didn't acquire Zach Britton. They didn't go out and get any of those guys. David Robertson, they went out and got Colton Brewer as the only guy. He ended up making the team. That hasn't worked out for the first half. And now, like I wrote today in an analysis of this whole deadline, this is now the rubber match of the, you know, bullpen gamble series. It worked once. It didn't work the second time. And now at the trade deadline, for the third time, we'll see if these in-house options can push the Red Sox to where they need to go.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the question. So as the league gets more, you know, book on Darwinson Hernandez, on Josh Taylor, how do hitters approach those guys differently? And can they've both shown signs of being potentially really good, but can you trust those guys to keep doing it? How will their ability to adjust, affect how well they can do down the stretch? Because I mean, the Red Sox have thrown a lot of guys into, I mean, the Travis Lakens and Josh Smiths and Ryan Webbers of the world. There's been a lot of guys that have
Schwarren,
yeah,
Bobby Pointer and all these guys. Yeah,
there's been a lot of guys out there. They're just trying to hope that something. Hope that something sticks. So yeah, they have to hope that Brazier does kind of, I mean, that was Dombrowski's thing yesterday, that he thinks that Brazier's a guy that'll help them. And maybe Hector Velasquez, who's been effective in stretches, comes up and helps at some point. You're asking these guys, none of whom have pitched high leverage innings in a pennant race, to do it really effectively. And other than Workman, who did it in 13, it's there's nobody
that last year as well.
Yeah, a little bit last year, but was not in the postseason roster for a reason. Right. And so I think you look at where they are. You have to hope that nobody falters, because who do you go to if they do? It's right. not a great situation at all. So I mean, my question is, how aggressive was Dombrowski really trying to be yesterday? I mean, was he really hoping to get something out of it, or did he really look at this and say that it wasn't worth spending prospects on to get this team better, because the starting pitching hasn't been good enough to really stock the bullpen behind it.
Yeah, I think, you know, Dave Dombrowski, as you saw in that press conference, what I want to get to now, yesterday, he kind of does the thing with he kind of does a word splash of all these guys who they believe in the bullpen. And I think at the baseball writers dinner, and I've talked about this on the show before, at the baseball writers dinner in January, he said, we have four viable guys for, you know, whether it's the closer role or high-end back-end guys. Workman wasn't one of them. He mentioned Barnes, Brager, Tyler Thornburg, and Stephen Wright. Thornburg's released, Brager's in AAA. Stephen Wright is with the worst toe injury of all time, apparently, in Fort Myers, and doesn't look like he's really going to be a factor for the rest of the year. And Barnes obviously didn't hold the role. So 0-for-4 there. And now yesterday you have the same kind of thing. He's mentioning Darwinson Hernandez, Josh Taylor, Nathan Eovaldi, Ryan Brager, you know, these guys, Heath Embry has been throwing the ball better. And it's the same kind of word splash of names that we've seen or heard for the last couple of years. I think the press conference yesterday was fascinating to me, and we both wrote similar type things about our reaction to it. You know, I think Dave Dombrowski came out, and he's usually extremely polished, has a very clear message, has a very clear strategy of communication. And while, you know, he was still good and candid at some points yesterday, there was two different themes that he talked about the whole time. And I think that him doing that for the whole press conference really spoke to how he was truly conflicted about what to do. Number one, he believes he has enough talent on his team to compete for the rest of the season and deep into October. But number two, he believes that his team hasn't done enough to deserve mortgaging those top prospects or overpaying for a guy to be supplemented at the deadline. Somewhere in that middle ground is where Dave Dombrowski saw himself and felt that the Red Sox were throughout July, and that ended up, you know, playing into them standing pat. So as I wrote today, those two schools of thought, one, that they're good enough to do it and that he has that belief, but number two, not good enough. I think it comes down to, at this point, do the players look at this as, you know, insulting that, well, we're not good enough to add to, or do they look at it as a vote of confidence that he's confident enough in the 25 guys in this room? Like he said yesterday, the guys in that locker room will win the World Series if we do it, not anybody from the outside. Do they look at it as an insult, or do they look at it as a sign of faith? I want to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it probably varies a little bit from guy to guy. On some level, I think it really depends on what they think of themselves. I think they're all probably happy at this point that the trade deadline has passed, because, well, not a lot of guys in the major league roster were really talked about being moved. Nobody's losing a job to somebody. It's for better or for worse, it's theirs to go with. And whether Steve Pierce ever comes back or Stephen Wright, as we've mentioned, Ryan Brager comes back up, it's guys that, you know, it's guys that you've been with before, whether last year or this season. So I think if you're the Red Sox, if you're the players themselves, I think they're all confident guys. I mean, they didn't get there by not being confident. I think they probably look at this and say that, all right, that, you know, that they're good enough. But I think if you got in the Kansas City Royals locker room before the season and asked them if they were good enough to make the playoffs, to a man, they'd all say yes, and to a large degree believe it, because I think that's the way athletes are wired.
Not the Orioles, though. They probably didn't believe it.
Yeah, no, definitely not the Orioles. Yeah. But you look at a guy like Porcello last night. I mean, he comes off the field and bangs up the TVs there in the first inning. It's clearly getting to him. Yep. And so we saw it manifest. We saw the frustration manifest itself that way in him. How is it manifesting itself in some other guys that when they're mm-hmm. struggling? What's going on in Heath Embry's mind right now as he's all of a sudden hit a rough patch? And Chris Sale comes out and has another you know, middling game the way he did on Sunday. What's going on in his mind? And is there enough time to get the important pieces right that you need to have right to have any chance at this, because there's no cushion right now. It's obviously very much a they've got to get better, and they've got to get better fast.
I agree. Yeah, totally. It's crunch time. They're heading into now a very crucial 4-game set in New York over 3 days. I think doubleheaders, sometimes there's a game teams kind of punt on, and there's a game that teams really, you know, try to win. There's kind of the A team and then the B team. You know, the Red Sox obviously are going to have Brian Johnson starting one of those games. So, and obviously he's been good at times, but coming off the injury list, excuse me, you don't know exactly what you're going to get. The Red Sox don't have time to kind of monkey around and have one of those punt games on Saturday in the Bronx. They need to, you know, really look for a sweep of that doubleheader. Teams are usually happy with the split. The Red Sox win 3 of 4 from the Yankees again this weekend, you know, beat up in their starting pitching. We saw that they can do it a week ago. I think that would be a good step forward, but it's just been the same thing, you know, deadline aside, 5-2 against those two teams. They basically saved themselves from being deadline sellers, even if Dave Dombrowski won't admit that. And then they come out and lose 3 in a row. Just the roller coaster continues. And I think a dead patch last night. So I think now at this point, with 2 months to go, almost exactly 2/3 of the season gone, it's important to look at how the rest of the league was affected by the trade deadline. The Yankees obviously did nothing, but you're not looking at the Yankees as the number one competitor right now for the Red Sox. The Astros, the same type of thing. The Astros, as Matt mentioned before, really bulked up getting Zach Greinke from the Diamondbacks for a huge prospect haul. They ended up getting two relievers or a starter and a reliever from the Blue Jays, and Aaron Sanchez and Joe Biagini, who are both controllable. Martin Maldonado, catcher, comes from the Cubs to the Astros. So they loaded up for October, which they are almost certainly going to be a part of. The Twins ended up adding two relievers, Dyson and Sergio Romo. And the Red Sox, three main wild card competitors, all made significant trades. The Athletics added three pitchers, Jake Diekman, Homer Bailey, and Tanner Roark. So two guys to the rotation, and Roark and Bailey, and one to the bullpen and Diekman. The Rays did what the Rays always do. They made like 19 trades, some as buyers, some as sellers. And you walk away from it saying, wow, I don't know most of the names here, but I'm sure that they're all going to be borderline all-stars within the next year, because that's what the Rays do. They got Aguilar from the Brewers is one of their bigger moves. They got Nick Anderson and Trevor Richards, and a move that is as under the radar as it can get, because those are names that you've probably never heard of. Nick Anderson's a very good reliever. They gave up Ryan Stanek and a top prospect, Sanchez, to get that deal done. They made some other ones. Kolarik goes to the Dodgers, and they got Eric Sogard. So, you know, the Rays, with a lot of roster overhaul in the last 4 or 5 days. We'll see how that works out. And the Indians making what I think is the most fascinating move of the deadline, maybe in the non-Greinke category. They trade Trevor Bauer, the enigmatic Trevor Bauer, for the enigmatic Yasiel Puig, kind of one headache for another, for Terry Francona. But they end up getting Franmil Reyes, who's a guy with like over 25 homers, from the Padres, and Logan Allen, who's a top pitching prospect, who's among the top 100 in baseball. The Red Sox had traded for Craig Kimbrel a few years ago. So, Matt, I look at the Indians, obviously, as one of the premier contenders in the wild card. My first reaction, I tweeted this out, was that, oh, the Red Sox are big winners of this Bauer trade because the Indians are weakened. And then you look at what they got, and you think they got two outfielders with pop and a guy who can slot into the rotation that was one of the top 100 prospects in baseball. Risky move, obviously, for a team that's chasing the wild card, but in the long term, looks good. And for this season, I think, you know, after further review, I think the Indians actually, you know, made out very good in that deal.
I think Reyes especially, he's a guy that is much more of a DH than really an outfielder for his career going forward. I think that's a guy that they probably look at and say that he can fill that role for a while for them potentially. Trevor Bauer is interesting because it's not very often you think let's move an elite pitcher while you're contending. But he's such an interesting, his personality. You wonder just how grating having him on your roster is for a long period of time. Is that the Nomar trade in some senses that they, if you remember, mm-hmm. in 2004, a lot of people thought that Nomar's frustration and dissatisfaction with his situation in Boston had kind of been had been kind of a dead fish in the
blocking my ears right now
in the Red Sox locker room, and I think they thought that adding Cabrera and his sort of effervescent personality was something that helped that Red Sox team. And so you wonder with Bauer, is he somebody that that his kind of his personality is he's a loner. He's not a, necessarily a real popular teammate. That losing him can help if you get talented in other places. And so Yasiel Puig, for all his kookiness, you saw him right in the middle of that brawl the other night, fighting for his Reds teammates. He's
his former teammates at that point.
Yeah, really. And that he's right there, that these, you know, these guys were his brothers at that point, that he's in that mix. There's something to be said for that. And so yeah. I think if you're Terry Francona, you've probably at times had nightmares about Manny Ramirez being back on your roster after some of the things he dealt with. But Terry Francona was really good at pressing the right buttons with Manny Ramirez. Now, I'm not saying Yasiel Puig is Manny Ramirez, but it seems like the combination of talent, occasional lapses in effort, and personal judgment, I think is probably true in both of their cases. But I think there's I think it's something that Terry Francona is good at. And so if you look at what they got, if Logan Allen pans out, there's some things there that make you think that the Indians can make that work. And Terry Francona is as good a manager in baseball at taking guys that are not perfect players, but finding ways to put them in situations where they can use the, you know, get the best out of the skills that they have. And this Indians team seems to fit that.
Yeah, for sure. One of the more fascinating moves, like I mentioned, Trevor Bauer's last act in an Indians uniform will go down as him throwing the ball over the fence the other day, which was a wild move that I think a lot of people were surprised about. Maybe not that surprised if you know the guy. The most egregious Trevor Bauer moment of all time. This is a personal vendetta. He was on his UCLA recruiting trip. They took him to Pauley Pavilion for a game. UCLA, arguably the most storied basketball program in the country, and instead of playing along and wearing UCLA stuff, he decked out in the gear of his favorite college basketball team, the Duke Blue Devils, which I think says all you need to know about one Trevor Bauer. So, but I, well, one thing with that, I think Bauer's obviously made it very clear that he's not willing to sign a multi-year deal. He's come out with this thing that he made a promise to a friend that if he ever signed a multi-year deal, he'd be allowed to shoot him with a BB gun in a region you don't want to get hit. And so he's going to be signing only one-year deals from now on, whether that's a one-year $30 million deal, a one-year $35 million deal, whatever that ends up being, in a year and a half when he's a free agent.
That feels like an unenforceable deal to me, the BB gun deal, by the way. I'm not sure that holds up.
Well, he's committed to it, so he's, you know, and this is a guy who I could see doing it. I don't know. It's all nonsensical at a point. So the Reds don't really have the ability to sign him to a long-term deal. It's so bizarre that we could be actually talking about this but it's true, and I fully believe it. The Indians probably thought, you know, maybe we want to commit to Francisco Lindor, who's absolutely beloved by everybody in baseball and everybody's favorite player and everybody's favorite guy. Commit to him, and we're not going to re-sign Bauer or some of these other guys. But I think it's just interesting to me. The Indians, you think about kind of the best young rotations that we saw come up over the last few years. There's been a lot of talk about, you know, Syndergaard and Wheeler in the last few days. You think back to what that Mets rotation could have been. Harvey, you know, who is also in the off-the-field or difficult guy category, and he's a Carolina guy, so our bad. But, you know, him and Syndergaard, Matz, and Wheeler, and that group that they had, that and DeGrom obviously has worked out, but that rotation never panned out altogether. With the Indians, you think about, you know, Kluber and Carrasco, who obviously he's dealing with leukemia right now, but he's been good. Bauer, Clevenger, some of these guys they've had. And the fact
that Danny Salazar.
Yeah, Danny Salazar was very good for a stretch. You know, you think about those guys, obviously they got very, very close to a World Series a few years ago, but the fact that they were never able to put it together is kind of shocking. So that's you know, a lot packed into a 30-minute period. It's a lot more than the Red Sox packed into the 30-minute period before the deadline, when it seems like they had already decided to punt. Andrew Kastner is the only new Red Sox in July. Matt, bold prediction time before we close the show. Do the Red Sox sneak into a wild card team? Dave Dombrowski said, you know, when he's talking about his roster, this is it, meaning the guys we have in here. Let's go. Is that team good enough to sneak into the wild card in the last 53 games of the season?
Are they good enough, or are they going
will they do
to
it? Will they do it?
I've been wavering a lot on this, but right now I don't think so. I don't think so. If you look at the way David Price has pitched in the last couple of starts, I don't have great faith in Chris Sale's ability to keep it to pitch, you know, effectively, consistently effective. And Rick Porcello is struggling. So at that point, you're asking an awful lot of Eddie Rodriguez and Andrew Cashner to stay afloat. I think they can. I think it's going to come down to the wire for them. I think you're talking, you know, in the mid-September, that every game matters a lot. But I think they're going. I think the teams that are ahead of them are a little better positioned to do it. And I think they're going to just miss.
And there you go. Negative Matt Latour on a Thursday.
Yourself, you've got him in.
I don't know. I've wavered too. I think Cleveland's could take a step back in the immediate future without Bauer. I think that could be fair to say. The Rays over the last 2 days have impressed, but for a stretch there, they haven't. I'm going to say it comes down to a 4-game series in St. Petersburg from September to September 23rd. Whoever wins that series gets in. That will be my bold prediction, because I really am 50-50 on the Red Sox chances right now. That's been Matt Votor from Mass Live. I'm his colleague, Chris Cotillo, a lot younger than he is, but you can read us both at masslive.com. Matt, thank you as always.